Hello and welcome to the Chris Allen podcast brought to you in association with WCRFM, which you can hear on 101.8 FM in Wolverhampton and South Staffordshire via WCRFM.com or by telling your smart speaker to play WCRFM. In this week's podcast, we're going to be hearing from Jason Guy and John Woodward about the Wet Your Wolf Whistle podcast beer, which is raising money for charity. Fantastic initiative. Councillor Stephen Simpkins will be telling us about the priorities in the budget that went through last week. Also, the reaffirmation by Wolverhampton City Council of its commitment to the armed forces and also Bilston Market celebrations. Cycles are also now a part of the integrated travel hub, so we'll be hearing about that too. Councillor Beverley Mamenabardi will be reflecting for International Women's Day. She'll also be telling us about social care career opportunities and that the health app is going from strength to strength, breaking through the 10,000 mark now. Councillor Bapinda Gakal will be telling us about the new housing in Heathtown and also what the city is doing in order to reduce the number of rough sleepers and give them all-round support. Rebecca Clark of Wolverhampton Homes has got a small grant scheme to tell us about. The deadline is this coming Monday at the 13th of March at midnight. So if you're going to be applying to that, you need to get your applications in. And also we'll be hearing from Brenda Shuttleworth as part of Fair Trade Fortnight, hearing about how the Fair Trade shop is doing in the Mander Centre. First of all, though, here's Jason Guy and John Woodward. Great to welcome Jason Guy and John Woodward to talk about beer. How did this come about, Jason?
Well, I can't take any credit for this. I've got to give full credit to John Wood. But John is a keen IPA drinker. And I mean that in the most polite sense. And he introduced me to a fantastic brewery called the Green Duck Brewery based over in Stourbridge. I'm a lager drinker, but I'm not an IPA drinker. And I must say, John got me hooked pretty much immediately. And it was John's idea to develop a beer in homage to the podcast, the Wolf's podcast that I host, The Wolf Whistle, and raise money for charity. And like I said, full credit to John. And there's a beer launching next week, Wet Your Wolf Whistle, and it's a good tipple.
John, you add to that then, if you're the inspiration behind the beer, if not behind the podcast.
Obviously I listen to the podcast. Jason and I have worked on a number of things over the years. He's the fundraiser really in Wolverhampton for lots of things, and I'm not really a fundraiser myself, but I like to think that I come up with the odd idea that works. We actually had a classical pianist come to the Mount Hotel a few years ago in Chetnell, which nobody had ever done before, and that raised a few quid. And then the reason Green Duck got involved is that a few years ago they were looking for some money to have a canning line into the brewery, and they went on one of these fundraising pages where they asked people to invest. And because I like the odd beer, I decided to invest, particularly because for every £100 that you put in, you got £200 back in beer. Right. So, you know, absolutely brilliant.
Cheap at half the price, as they say.
Absolutely. So anyway, they got the canning line done. They supplied me with a beer. And I like the fact that a little local brewery run by a Villa fan, an Albion fan and a Wolves fan. And what they do is they bring out a different beer every month, which is what craft breweries are about. And just chatting one day with Jason about trying to do something a bit different, I said, well, why don't we ask them if they'll do a beer? So sent off the email expecting Alex Hill, who runs the brewery, to say, no, it's not going to work. And delighted that he came back and said, we've got nothing to lose. Let's go for it. So right. That's it, really.
No, brilliant. And Jason, you know, let's go back to the podcast for a second or two. You've been doing this for quite a while. You've got lots of ex-Wolves players on there as well. We've now popped your podcast onto our own website. So it's just below mine, I have to say, not alongside it. But anyway, it's there as well.
I mean, good company anyway, Chris.
it's very kind. But no, tell us a little bit about the podcast and how, you know, why you got that going in the first place.
Do you know what? It was started really on a bit of a whim, and it was just before lockdown, and I've come up with this idea. Listen, I help run the Wolves All Stars with Mel Eaves, and I'm sitting in the dressing room with the players, listening to them regaling their stories. I thought, wouldn't it be great if the wider public could hear some of these stories? And I asked a few of the lads if they'd record something, and they was happy to do it. So I launched the Wolf Whistle podcast, and during lockdown, it really took off, Chris, because we was all locked up inside and not much to do. And I managed to get access to so many former Wolves players who was doing the same board sitting at home, and they told their stories, and it just went from strength to strength. And we've had now nearly 100,000 downloads, which is absolutely mind blowing. And as John says, he's a big listener to the podcast, and he married the two together. So, like I said, John's the ideas man. But the Wolf Whistle, we've interviewed now 106 former players and managers, and I've got another couple of hundred lined up, so there's plenty more to come.
That's brilliant. Now, right behind all this is actually raising money. Let's get away from the football, get away from the beer for a minute or two. You're raising money for this, and Jason, obviously, there's a real personal aspect to this.
Oh, absolutely. So my daughter was born in October 2020 with a very rare genetic condition called 1p36 chromosome deletion. And when she was born, we didn't initially know that there was anything wrong. Then there was told, we was told upon really her birth that there was a diagnosis with something, and then we was told it was 1p36. Now this is 1 in 10,000 births, Chris, and we didn't know anything about the condition before Olivia was diagnosed. And listen, she's having challenges, she's struggling. She's 2 years of age now and she still can't sit up, but we have complete hope. So we've been told that she may never walk, we've been told she may never talk, but she goes to therapy now pretty much bi-weekly, every other week. She's going over to Poland with us in May. We use a charity called the Footsteps Foundation, which we send her to therapy, and she's really coming on leaps and bounds. So every penny that's raised from 20% of the profits of the beer, all that money goes into therapy for children. And I know firsthand, Chris, how much it's helping these families. I know, I can see in the development of our daughter, and I can see how she's progressing, and that wouldn't be the case if it wasn't for the therapy. So it's obviously the beer is a fantastic idea. It's raising money for a very, very important cause, and I know firsthand the difference that it's making.
Jason, I see your tweets and I see your interaction with the whole family, really working hard, and it always looks very, very positive and determined. I'm sure there's some dark moments and some agonising times as well, but you have this very positive attitude with regard to trying to make sure that you get the very, very you provide the very, very best.
Yeah, thank you, Chris. And that does mean a lot to me, because when your daughter gets a diagnosis, it's quite difficult to go quite inward, really, and look at all the negatives from it. And yes, I suppose initially the glaring's a negative, but then, you know, the joy that little girl brings to our life is just absolutely incredible. And when she does little things like hold a bottle, right. You know, I've got my son now, and he was holding a bottle after, you know, 7 or 8 months, and 11 months he was walking. My daughter holds a bottle, and you know, we're getting the cat. It's just amazing. And we have to see the positives, and that positivity, I believe, gives other people some hope as well. Because when you do get the diagnosis, it's so daunting. That as I said, the negatives are glaring. You can't see a way out. You've been told statistics like there's a 90% chance that your daughter will never walk. There's an 100% chance that she's going to have some form of learning difficulty. There's a 98% chance that she's going to have a vocabulary of 100 words or less. But do you know what? I suppose we see that as we've turned it now to be a bit of a challenge, turn the negative into a positive. My wife wakes up every morning with my daughter at 7 o'clock, and she just works on her throughout the day. And all I'll say is, Chris, all we can do is make my daughter the best version of her and give her best life. And you know, what more could she want and need?
Indeed. And you will do that for Olivia. I know you will. I see it happening. And I'm sure everybody, you know, has got you in their thoughts and their prayers on the journey you're on. And you'll be an inspiration to other families
as well.
Let's jump back to the beer, John. So you got this event this coming Wednesday that's going to be an opportunity for people to sample it.
Yeah, the brewery have got a fantastic, what they call the tap room next to the actual place where the beer is brewed, and it's quite a large room, holds about 100 people. For some time now, they've been doing really good promotions where you can get a beer and a pizza, or you can get 2 hours of unlimited beer drinking on a Saturday. I mean, that's something that I haven't yet tried, but I ought to. And again, we just spoke to them and said, well, is there any possibility that we can launch it here? Jason's got a few ex-Wolves players coming. We've sold at the moment about 70 tickets, but I think we'll sell quite a few more between now and Wednesday. A lot of people tend to buy at the last minute. And the idea really is to just get a few people together. We've got Dave Paul coming as a Motown and Soul DJ. He plays at the Emerald Club. So just a little bit different, really, I suppose. A bit of music, have a beer, eat a pizza, have a chat like we normally do. All finish at 11 o'clock for us oldies, and then that'll do for me.
That sounds brilliant. That sounds brilliant. Do people need tickets, or can they just call in? Can they just turn up?
Well, as it stands at the moment, they can just turn up and pay on the door. But we're recommending tickets because it's a bit easier for the catering staff to know how many pizzas they've got to be producing, because the price of the ticket, £15, includes a pint of beer and a pizza.
Right.
So therefore, we're trying to give them a chance that they're not rushing around at the last minute trying to make another 40 pizzas for people walking off the street.
And also that no food is wasted, because you want every bit of profit here going to the right cause as well. So let's get organised. Now, we'll put all the links out so that on our social media as well, so people know where to get the tickets from. And if people don't sample it on Wednesday, is there a chance to sample it another time?
Well, I think Jason's trying to arrange for it to be on draft in a couple of places, including Mo Camera's Bar in Tetnall.
Right.
And Bar Sport in Cannock. And we're trying to get it into a few more places. I'm speaking to a few independent off licenses to try and get it out there. But you can order direct from the brewery. And if your order, I think it's 12 cans in a case, then delivery is certainly free of charge to me in Bridge North. At greater distances they have to charge, but it all can be ordered on the website. You can order anything from 3 cans as a taster pack to a pack of 24.
That sounds excellent. We'll get that pushed out as well. Thank you both indeed, and thank you both very much for all the money you're raising and all the support you're giving to those in need. And you know, there's a great story behind this, and we wish you all the best. And I look forward to tracking a can down somewhere.
Chris, we can drop you one in at some point.
Or I could go and order some myself by using the link that you can find in the show notes. That was John Woodward, and before that you heard from Jason Guy. Now it's time to hear about the priorities in the city's budget, the reaffirmation of its commitment to the armed services, market celebrations going to be happening in Bilston, and also how cycles are now a part of the integrated transport hub in Wolverhampton. Joining me now is Councillor Stephen Simpkins, the Deputy Leader of the City of Wolverhampton Council, Cabinet Member for the Inclusive Economy, and also Local Councillor in Bilston East. Good afternoon, sir.
Hello, mate. How are you doing?
I'm doing okay, thank you. The budget went through City Council this week, and chatted with the Leader last week about some priorities. A headline would seem to be support for young people in getting active.
Yes. Do you know what? That's a great initiative that the guys have come up with, so as we can allow our children and to use our sports facilities for free. That's that extra step, because you know, for a long while we've had free swimming at all our centres that we run, but now we've gone the next step and they can use the gym and join the clubs. So that's really important that we embed fitness into our society. You know, we could all learn a lesson, especially myself, from regular exercise. It's important.
Yeah, absolutely. We're all on there as well. But this is a priority around young people, isn't it? That's there, right? I can see it in lots of different initiatives coming out of the council, the 1824 Wolves at Work campaign, you know, the City Ideas Fund. It seems to be a council that is prioritising its younger citizens.
Correct, but that's the future. So that's the future of our children, and that's the future of our city. So we want to keep it eternally young. But, you know, as us that I'm getting on in life, like myself, we want them to look after us. So we meant to have an inclusive society, so we look after each other. And that's what I think that we do out of our authority, and I would say better than most.
Anything else standing out in the budget that you're particularly pleased with you're going to be able to roll out?
What's really important in this current climate of finances and people's cost of living crisis, there's a big package of support for people who are really struggling in our city. And what we need to do, and we need to make sure, is that people just contact us. Don't use us as the last resort, use us as the first resort. And then together we can resolve the issues moving forward. The more that we can do for people who are really struggling, the better it is for everybody.
So people go to the council website, wolverhampton.gov.uk, on the front page there you've got a link to cost of living support, haven't you?
Yeah, and it's not just the the council, it's Wolverhampton Arms as well. They've done some absolutely great work to be fair. And like I say, as things move forward, and we'll know more when we have the spring statement from the government to see what else we can do or else we can add to. Because again, like every other council, we can only do what we can do with the resources that national government give us. And I think we use ours wisely. We demonstrate what we can do to support as many people in our city.
And also this week I saw this reaffirmation of the council's commitment to the armed forces. Tell us a bit about that. That came as a surprise to me because I didn't know there was a covenant, I have to say. So reaffirmation, yeah?
It's legislation and it went on the statute in December last year. And what we're doing is we're looking back to see where we can be improve and be better. So that's the reaffirmation is what we're doing. The Arms Covenant supports servicemen and women coming back into our city and coming back into society, or even young children, as we're talking about young children, who are thinking of a career in the military of some form or the other. So the commitment that we do. And as I said, when we was talking about what we do in Wolverhampton to a group of Arms Covenants and local authorities, is that it's the right thing to do. So if it's the right thing to do, all the barriers and hurdles you get over. So I'm really proud of our status in that respect.
If people want to know more, they can go to armedforceswolves.com as a link there.
Yeah.
But talking there about Armed Forces personnel coming back into the community from their work, often very, very vulnerable. We know that the number of homeless, although it's a low figure in Wolverhampton, disproportionate number are ex-armed forces people. And so therefore, there's a real need for this support.
There definitely is. And what's always missed is mental health and the support within mental health, post-traumatic stress. And that's really important because my colleagues in the Arms Covenant call it coming back to Civvy Street, is if we can work with the military to see when people are coming back to our city, then we can get in there early. And it's really important that we do that. That opens up job opportunities, apprenticeships. That opens up chances of houses and and that's what we need to do. We need to work with all people. Now, what I would like to do is if we could raise the bar for everyone to the Arms Covenant level, then I think we're really motoring in our city. So that's important. And the opportunity that presents itself with the Arms Covenant is for businesses to sign up to the government and become a priority. So then when we do people seeking employment, them on our Arms Covenant list, then we can passport them straight away and do the work in between.
I don't know personally from this because I've got my son is in the army and a senior officer, and this has been looked at from both ends now, I think, because even the army now recognise the need to reintegrate people into Civvy Street. So this is actually is coming from both ends, isn't it?
But what we need to do is need the government to have the big ministerial bodies like housing and health working with the Arms Covenant and the military, so it's integrated, not just a single arm of government through the military for the MOD. What it should be the three big ones, which is housing and health. So we can, sort of square that circle off.
Indeed, indeed. Now, you're very proud Bilston man yourself, sir, and I see you've got your markets celebration, 50 years this coming Saturday. Well, this time of year, but you've got a big celebration this coming Saturday. Tell us about it.
Yeah, Saturday at 11 o'clock it starts, and it's really important that we do celebrate Bilston every chance we do. And do you know what we do? Simon Archer does a great job. So does Joe, and the market's absolutely fantastic. But the market's a lot older than 50 years. It's where it's situated now. Now, we've been talking about this over the last couple of days, is that the old market used to be housed inside. So you've got the indoor and the outdoor market, but there was all sorts and it had a real character to it. Now, I think we've still got a character to it, but we're putting some investment in up to the tune of £5-6 million that's allowed us to reconfigure our market space. But the market's great. It's a family friend.
And well, you've got over 200 stalls there, absolutely fantastic, isn't it? It is a community almost within itself. And the other thing about markets is, you get to know people, don't you? And
of course you do.
And you can order your usual and people will know what you're talking about.
Yeah. I'll go every Friday morning or every Saturday morning, and it's fantastic. So you can get that feel for it. And I meet lots of my old school friends now. I, as a child, I used to go go shopping with my mum and my nan, and we used to meet all her family friends and meet, you know, it's a whole community. So it's a live entity. And I would say that in the face of everybody shopping online, which is a fact, our market does really well. Thursdays it's ram-packed.
Right.
But what we need to do is we need more people to come and spend that time, not just money, but spend that time meeting people and get a real feel for it. And that's really important. And it's great for us because our bus station's right next to the market. So we're really lucky in that respect.
Indeed, you are. And yeah, so next Saturday, 11th of March, from 10 till 3, the celebrations. It's a 50 years of the Bilston Indoor Market Hall, obviously the market land a lot longer as well. And you've got music from Hit the Doll, as you all know, free face painting, balloon animals, all sorts of stuff going on there. Now, finally, I see you've been put on your bike this week as well.
Well, what's great is now we've got the fully integrated transport system at the train station at Wolverhampton. So we've got rail, road, bus, tram, and now we've got the bike. The next step, so with that integrated, is for us to utilise the canal.
Right.
Which is next to it. So we've, you know, it's reputed that in the West Midlands we've got a bigger canal network than Venice. So we need to, that's an asset for me. So that's my next campaign, is to bring the canals back into use.
And obviously the cycle usage is going to bring down the carbon footprint.
Yeah, it's really important. Also, we've got the connectivity that's going to go through East Park and it's going to go through the Willinor Road, and that's got, you know, a large amount of cycle lanes. And that's what we need. We need people to use an alternative transport than the car. And, you know, I keep hearing about these 15-minute cities and 20-minute towns or whatever. We need to use the transport system that's provided for us, and that's the utilise everything that we can to get people out of the car. Yes, the car's essential, and it's also essential to the economy, but every other journey, if it's a short journey from, say, from here to where I live in Rockypool to Bilston, 2 miles, hop on the bus, hop on the tram.
It's about changing habits, this, isn't it? Because
over
the years, I know I'm as guilty as anybody else. As you know, you just say, "Oh, jump in the car," and it's about learning. And it's what it's saving the carbon footprint. It's, you know, if you're biking, more exercise. So some of us oldies have probably got a bit of a redoing of our lifestyle to contend with.
I think that's right, and I think it's important that we embrace the change, but not just embrace it without input, but to listen to people and say and have their input and reflect that back. Now, you know, what I want us to do is to be active and involved in things that are taking place within our city. That's what I want us to do, because, you know, we can consult all day long, but until we get a real voice, we've got 64,000 residents in this city, and they all need to have a voice, and we need to listen and plan for that in the future. You know, it is the future. We were talking about children earlier; they are the future, so we want them to be engaged and involved.
Deputy Leader of the City of Wolverhampton Council, Councillor Stephen Simpkins, talking about young people being a priority in Wolverhampton. The Cabinet Member for Young People and Children is Councillor Beverley Momenabadi, and I caught up with her this week as well. First of all, we talked about International Women's Day and the importance of it and the need for men perhaps to have an attitude change.
Yeah, I think so. But I think it's more, for me, it's about bringing men on the journey as well. So I don't think we can achieve some of those culture changes without bringing men on the journey. So helping men to have an understanding, I think, of challenges that women face just because they are women is important. And having them as allies rather than, you know, blaming men for things, I think is a good way to look at it as well. And there are lots and lots of big advocates of women who are men. So I think it's really important to take men on that journey, to be honest.
Absolutely essential. And it's an educational process, because unless you walk in someone's shoes, then you don't know what life is like. But the attitudes towards women, are they changing? Maybe, you know, we're getting a bit less ignorant.
Yeah, I also think so. For me, I've always worked in quite predominantly male environments work-wise, so politics being one, but also my job, you know, outside of the council in manufacturing, where I've worked mainly for the last 4 years in buildings of like 1,000 men and probably like 10-20% women. And I see a culture change in those places. I think that diversity and inclusion in itself is on the agenda big time for a lot of organisations and businesses out there. I also think some of these jobs that are historically taken and done by men, whether that be factory work or, you know, building engines or aeroplanes or whatever, actually we need those jobs to appeal more to women. And actually a lot of the work those organisations are doing now are going into schools, talking to girls about those kind of careers that are available to them.
And is that about trying to enable women to balance out their lives, essentially, to be, you know, to have children and care for them as well, alongside having a job, having a career, having their own professional ambitions alongside their family ambitions?
Absolutely. And, you know, I would be lying if I didn't say that balance was a challenge even for myself. I think there's a lot of pressure on women, and we get asked a lot of questions that men wouldn't, you know. I, for example, would be asked all the time, you know, why I haven't got children yet, or when I'm having children. You know, a man isn't really asked those questions when, you know, discussing things about work and life, but women are. I think also that employers can do more to support women in the workplace. So historically, you'd have like a maternal leave policy, for example, which looked at, you know, how women can have time off while they look after their children and then come back to work. But actually, rather than that, what would help women to stay in work would be to have parental leave policies where men can stay at home and look after children and still be paid in the same way that women would, so that women can go back to work. And that's just one example of changes that I've seen with some of the big employers in the city moving over to those things, like, you know, listening to women in the workplace. What we don't want is, and especially because the childcare costs are so high now as well, that women feel like just because they make a decision to have a family that they can't go back into the workplace, or they can't afford childcare to allow them to go back into the workplace.
And yeah, there's a lot to learn about that family support work. I've talked to someone you know very well, Jez Howell, a month or so ago. Yeah. And the Fatherhood Institute, again, you know, paternity leave. And if you had, you know, a gay couple who'd adopted a child, they're only one of them's entitled to a couple of weeks paternity leave. You know, there's a lot of balancing to be done still, isn't there?
Yeah, and I think that we've got to move with the times as well. And, you know, we have to look at our workforce, our population, which is changing. You know, like I said, I know women engineers, I know lots of women politicians, as you know, as well. You know, I know women who build mechanics as well. And that's because I've had a really privileged experience to work in some of these settings where you find these great women doing great things. But I think it is about taking men on the journey as well. What we don't want in any place is people to think that women are given opportunities just because they are women. We definitely need to make sure women have the same opportunities as everyone else. But I think that we have to take men on the journey with us and make sure they're our allies and, you know, our advocates for some of this important change that we're trying to make.
And the theme of this year's International Women's Day is embracing equity. And I love the cartoon, or I don't know whether it's right to call it a cartoon, certainly the graphic from the Robin Wood Johnson Foundation that you've got on the council website about the difference between equality and equity. And the trouble, this is when radio is down for, really, because we've got a picture here. And equality is where, you know, the bike is the same size for everybody, whether the person's disabled, whether it's a bloke with extra long legs, or whether it's a lady, or whether it's a child. But equity is where you have something that's bespoke to you, and that's the difference between equality and equity, isn't it? And I think sometimes, again, that's a learning journey for us.
Absolutely. And I think there's been real change over, I'd say, the last 5 years, definitely. And we just need to continue on that journey as you know, a city, but also as a country as well. I think it's really important. You know, I see my role now. I've had great women in my life who have really helped me in so many different ways, built my confidence, allowed me into spaces that I never thought I'd be capable of doing. And I really see my role now as supporting other women who don't have the loudest voice in the room to find that voice. And I really see that as something that I want to continue doing to support women, really to achieve the best that they can achieve.
And maybe we'll get to the day one day when they don't need that voice, because it just naturally happens.
Absolutely.
Now, there's going to be a craft session at the Art Gallery on Tuesday between 1:30 and 3:30, when participants make their own origami tulips in suffragette colours, covered in empowering messages as well. And so there's activity this week as well. So again, people can pop to wolverhampton.gov.uk to find out everything that's happening there, can't they? Now, another key part of the role you've had, and I know something you particularly love, is actually looking at those who are in the care sector, and there's opportunities for careers in there as well, isn't there, for people who sort of can give more, learn more and support children, young people.
Absolutely. So social workers in the city, and it's actually International Social Work Day, I think this month, where we'll be celebrating our social workers. But, you know, social workers play such an important part in keeping children safe, making sure, you know, vulnerable children especially are supported in so many different ways. And we have our Step Up to Social Work programme, which is applications are going to be opening. It starts in January, and Step Up to Social Work is really a 14-month programme which offers graduates and people who have got experience of working with vulnerable children and young people the opportunity for that career change, and exactly what it says on the tin, to step up to become a social worker. So, you know, we're absolutely looking for the right candidates, people with that experience, people with that passion. They can go to wolverhampton.gov.uk and type in Step Up to Social Work. But it's really for people who want to become a social worker but don't have a social work degree. There's the opportunity for them to train.
And do you think, I suppose over the years I hear some terrible thing, you know, social workers get, for a few minor incidents, that get really bad publicity. And yet we know the dependency we have on people caring for others, the most vulnerable across our city. So is there an image change needed sometimes to get people through some barriers?
Yeah, absolutely. So it really frustrates me, because I meet and speak to amazing social workers in Wolverhampton, you know, on a weekly basis. And without them, you know, we'd be stuffed is really the bottom line. You know, we'd be really stuffed. They do such an incredible job. I was at YOT, which is the Youth Offending Service, on Friday. I was talking to social workers there. You know, they are just such dedicated people who really dedicate their lives to making sure others are safe and well. And that absolutely needs to be a culture change around this. You know, they really hold up that service in that sector, and we'd be lost without them. So yeah, I know it's not a professional term, we'd be stuffed, but we really would be.
No, it's the truth. It's the truth.
And you know, I look at them sometimes and I just think, you know, it is just it takes an incredible person to do what they do. And it's very, very, it's not easy, it's challenging. You know, they have to find ways of not taking some of the things that they see and hear home with them. They have their own families as well. And juggling all that while having young people in this city at the forefront of what they do is just, it's incredible, really. So, yeah, so we absolutely value our social workers. We've got lots of projects and programmes in place where we recognise them through different reward and recognition activities. We have award-winning social workers who won awards last year, and we know that there'll be more of them coming through this year. So if you've got a passion and a heart and experience for working with vulnerable children, then have a look, you know, step up to social work. It is a faster way of getting into social work as well and becoming a social worker.
And don't say to yourself, oh, they wouldn't want me or whatever. It sounds like, you know, if you've got your heart in the right place, it sounds like one of those situations whereby as long as your heart's in the right place, and you've got a passion for it, the skills can be added on later. But you can't actually put in what's not already there.
Absolutely, yeah. And I meet so many people who are already working with vulnerable children in one way or another in the city, you know, whether that be in youth clubs, whether that be in pastoral roles in schools. And, you know, that this is a call out to those people, really, who thought about it and thought, oh, well, I've not got the qualifications, but actually they have the experience and this is a way to get the qualifications.
And I see, finally, the health app, it's gone through the 10,000 barrier.
Ooh, yeah.
It's rolling out really well, and you must be really pleased.
Yeah, I am. So this is our Better Health Rewards app, which we launched a couple of weeks ago. I've actually got my my Fitbit on today, my fitness tracker. And this is the idea is that if people are incentivized, they will make better, healthier life choices because they are incentivized. I've said this before. I think that everything's stacked against people to make healthier life choices at the moment. So, you know, paying for gym memberships in the cost of living crisis, buying those foods that are more healthy and having to cook them and use gas and electric. Things are stacked against people at the moment. And I think that being able to earn rewards such as supermarket vouchers or gym passes give people that extra push up what they need. You know, the fitness tracker actually gives you it vibrates when you've not moved enough. So quite, you know,
if you
have a job. Yeah. And if you have a job where you sat at a desk all day, you know, I find myself sometimes during the day when I'm not out and about, you know, it'll give me a nudge and I think, oh, I've not, you know, it's telling me to move because I've not got my steps in yet. You know, me and my partner, we went out for food last night and, you know, we were looking at, we're not calorie counters as such, but we both had our fitness trackers on. It's give us that motivation to go, actually, I'm not going to have that extra whatever. And, you know, there's no need to have that. I'll choose the healthier option. So it's even given me the motivation, you know. So we're really pleased. If you haven't signed up yet, you will have seen the literature. But if you just go to www.wolverhampton.gov.uk/rewards, you'll get the information on there. You'll be able to download that app and get involved. And you'll get sent a free fitness tracker and the opportunity to earn while making those better, healthier life choices.
Sounds like a no-brainer.
Yeah.
That's Councillor Beverley Momenabardi. Yeah, no-brainer. Download the app. You can find the links in the show notes. Fantastic work being done across the city of Wolverhampton to support those who are sleeping rough. A lot of people perhaps are hidden at the moment with regard to being homeless as well. Also some housing, new housing development in Heath Town. So great to be able to welcome Councillor Bhupinder Gakhal, who is the Cabinet Member for City Assets and Housings. How are you?
I'm very well, Chris. Very well indeed. Thank you. Yourself?
Good, thank you. Good. Yeah, so reminiscing recently of the opening of the Sarah Gary Monument down in Wensfield. Drive past occasionally. Looks beautiful, doesn't it?
It does. And as we were chatting earlier, Chris, you were talking about, especially at night when it's lit up, it's just beautiful, it really is.
Indeed. A great asset of the city, which is a bit of a pun into your role here. But moving on to Heath Town, we talked about this early days when it was all getting going, but getting close now to completing all the new council houses down there.
We are, Chris. And if I can just say a huge thank you to everybody involved, you know, everybody, you know, from the very first start, from the people knocking the doors and leafleting and letting people know what's going on. I mean, it's transformed the area from 0 to 100%. You know, it's absolutely gorgeous around there now.
Right.
And the three, you know, the 2, 3, 4-bedroom houses, much needed, Chris. They're not your average, you know, council house. They are absolutely out of this world. They're beautiful the way they've been designed and built.
I noticed you were there to cut the ribbons, which is a bit of a ceremony. It's good to celebrate these things as well. But the other aspect here, and we talked about this previously, is around the importance of having some outside space as well.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, these properties, Chris, along with all the new builds now that we're putting together, they've got their own charging point for 2 vehicles. So they're very eco-friendly. You know, I mean, we're trying to get the city eco-friendly, you know, as quickly as we can. But the greenery, the landscaping, it's not a matter of cramming everything we can into the space. I opened the door, Chris, and I walked in and I was blown away with the amount of space these houses have.
Right. So it's giving good quality to people in their homes, really important. Part of the feel-good factor of being a Wolfrunian, and also helps all our mental health and well-being as well, doesn't it, when we have a safe and secure home to live in?
It certainly does, Chris. And what gives you a really nice feeling about this whole project is that people are actually taking pride in their neighbourhoods. No disrespect to anybody. I mean, you drove through Heath Town 10, 20 years ago. It was a different story. You drive through Heath Town now, all the development that's going on, and you know, long may it continue, is just getting the pride back into communities. And people are just, you know, the support and the message we're getting, Chris, it's unbelievable. So it's brilliant. It makes it all worthwhile.
And do you think people, you know, are communicating with their neighbours more? Because I think, you know, during COVID, I heard stories about people who sort of spoke. They lived next to each other for years and years and years, but they hadn't spoken because, you know, it just life went on that way. But somehow some of the difficulties in life have brought people together.
Yeah, I mean, the funny thing is, Chris, I mean, you're probably a lot younger than me, but I remember back in my day growing up, you knew everybody in the street, you knew everybody in the area basically, and sadly that has, you know, we've lost that warmth, that touch that we had with neighbours. But you're right, it's weird, isn't it, that such a tragedy like COVID can bring people together again?
Yeah. It is indeed, but it brings out something of the community spirit perhaps we've lost, and it's had to come back through difficult circumstances. Now, moving on from new homes, also some good news in terms of, you know, there's only five people sleeping rough in the city of Wolverhampton, a very, very small number. And sometimes people do choose that, you know, it's almost their right. But this supporting people is around working together with partners, isn't it?
It is, Chris. You can't do anything without working together. And the thing is about with Wolverhampton, we've got partners. You know, we work really well with our stakeholders, with everybody. And you're right, you know, it fluctuates the figure. We sometimes end up with 9, 5, 4. You know, the figure goes up and down. I mean, what is a true figure if we're going to be honest with everybody? Because we've got so many people who are what we call, what's the phrase? Is it sofa surfing?
Surfing, yeah. They're jumping from house to house, just where they can lay their head.
Absolutely.
I was looking at the number of partners here, fantastic organisations across the City of Wolverhampton, Homes and Georgia Shore, P3, Good Shepherd, Changing Lives, The Haven, Recovery Near You, Refugee and Migrant Centre. I feel I've got to read them all now because it's only fair. But the partnership working on this is supporting people, isn't it?
It is.
And what were you saying there about the sofa surfing? Do you feel perhaps then there's hidden needs?
Sadly, because of the cost of living crisis we're in at the moment, there's people who have actually, I don't know, as the government said, have fallen through, you know, they're not on the radar, you know, but they're definitely there. My personal opinion is because the crisis we're in, I think there's a lot more people out there, Chris. And there's something called pride as well, Chris. You know, I mean, some people are very proud, you know, that they don't want to be classed as homeless, you know, and hence we've got the sofa surfers, you know, people staying at friends' houses or other places. But yes, there's an issue out there.
And if people want more information, obviously there's cost of living support on the council website, all the fantastic community shops we've been featuring on this programme and others.
You're right, Chris. And if I can also give a huge shout out to the Money Smart team, you know, from Wolverhampton Homes. I mean, I call them the unsung heroes because they do so much, that team. I mean, over the past year and a half, they've actually helped over 9,000 residents. You know, from turning the gas supplies back on, from simple little things like getting the white goods, you know, getting children beds, you know, preventing people from losing their homes. I mean, we've always said, engage with us, speak with us, you know, and we will look after, you know, we will do our very, very best to help everybody. But the Money Smart team, Chris, is there. Phenomenal what they do. It really is.
Well said. And the other aspect for people to remember is actually they may be entitled to some benefits that they're not claiming. Again, the support from via the cost of living team at the council on that one. But there's millions that goes unclaimed.
There is, Chris, and the magic word there is, you know, if you are run short or you're facing any hardship or your circumstances are changing, even if it's from, you know, £1 a week to £100 a week, contact us, speak to us, because, you know, don't suffer in silence. You've got an issue, contact us.
And another great event this week, the opening of Peter Bilson House, obviously named after one of your former colleagues. But again, another step forward in supporting the most vulnerable.
Chris, I'm glad you mentioned that. I mean, what can I say about the late, great Peter Bilson? Peter was a cabinet member for City Housing and Assets. And you know something? I don't even think I'm fit to lace his shoes, honestly. I mean, the gent was a giant amongst men. This project, he oversaw it. He did so much. You know, Chris, he was a councillor for over 40 years. He served the city for over 40 years. And this was his dream about helping our vulnerable. And turning Bond House, a tired old office space, into a place where we've got 34 plus units to help the most vulnerable, that's Peter's legacy. And long may his legacy live.
Well said, Bhupinder. Thanks as ever. Thanks for your time and thanks for sharing your thoughts there and all that support that goes to the most vulnerable across the city.
Thank you, Chris. Thanks for having me on. Thank you.
That's Councillor Bhupinder Gurkhal, the Cabinet Member for Housing and Assets, and I had the opportunity to go down to the formal opening of Peter Bilson House. I'll bring you some recordings from that at the weekend and also next week on the podcast. Wolverhampton Homes is rolling out a small grant scheme. It's paying back to the community something that they have received as well. Let's hear all about it. So it's great to be able to welcome Rebecca Clark, Head of Customer Experience. That sounds a really important job.
Well, we certainly try to make that the case, Chris, you know, with the amount of properties and customers that we've got across the city. Still a relatively new role, but I'm definitely finding my feet now after a couple of years and enjoyed getting to know all of our customers and introducing new schemes like the one we're going to talk to you about today.
Oh, that's great. And people being happy in their homes, you know, that's the most important thing in people's lives, really, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely. I think that's the key word is home. It isn't, you know, just a building or anything like that. We take great pride in trying to make sure that people feel safe and well in their homes and, as you say, happy. And, you know, there's lots of really great partner organisations across the city that help us in that mission as well. So, again, really excited to speak today to you about some of the stuff we're doing to support those organisations as well.
No, that's great. And you want to give something back, which is what this is all about now. Part of your own corporate responsibility is to give something back. Tell us about the scheme you're launching, because there's a very tight deadline date on it, so we don't want people to miss out.
Yeah, definitely. So it is going to be a quick turnaround, but we've launched this week, as of Monday, our new Giving Something Back scheme, which is a community chest. So lots of funding available for community-based organisations to put themselves forwards for small grants. And as part of our corporate social responsibility, we want to be giving out grants of around £50 to £1,000. But then there are also opportunities for a few bigger grants of up to £5,000. And the criteria for that is that you're a community-based organisation or group of volunteers that are putting on and delivering projects that really support particularly our tenants, but, you know, anywhere where our tenants are based across the city where they're looking to support us in helping to get people on in life.
And you've got a few categories you're looking at, learning, training, employment opportunities, really important, especially for younger people, digital inclusion, environmental and carbon reduction as well, health and well-being, social isolation, loneliness, community safety. So most groups will cover one of those, won't they?
Yeah, I'd like to think so. We wanted it to be as open as possible because we know that even the phrase giving something back, that means different things to different people. And there's lots of really worthwhile organisations across the city that do fantastic work to support people across all those range of things. There'll be other things, no doubt, that we've missed off. So I'd encourage any community group across the city, whether it be a charity, a tenants association, a group of volunteers that meet, you know, to put an application in for any new projects they're looking to start, or indeed in existing projects that maybe need a little bit of extra money to keep them ticking over. I'd encourage you to apply, and, you know, we're on hand to support organisations as well if they've got any questions, but hopefully every little helps, and we really want to support these groups to do what they need to do.
Right. So if people are wondering about something, they can sort of get a bit of advice from you, can they? Because I suppose it's important for you that the money goes in the right direction. It's important for them it goes in the right direction. So in some ways, you're partners in trying to spend the money the right way, aren't you?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's a really good word to use. And, you know, I've mentioned it already, but we do want to take a partnership approach. We do lots of things ourselves, and sometimes we'd realise, you know, that we're doing something in one area that another local charity that's been doing it a long time is also doing on the next street along. So we want to make sure that we can support these organisations that already exist and do some good work, really get behind them. We've designed a really simple application form. I think with some funding applications that can put small groups off, particularly if you're a group of volunteers, there's lots of red tape. We wanted to just put some really simple rules in place, and the application form details all of that. So it's some really basic details on what the money's going to help towards, who you're going to be helping, some of the aims that we've already talked about a minute ago, you know, so things like loneliness, does it address that? So it is some really basic details where you can show off the good work that you do and tell us a little bit more. And if you are struggling at all or have any questions, then there are contact details available on the web link as well, and we will support you to complete an application.
Now, that's great. And I suppose one of the questions that goes through my head, because I know lots of community organisations are thinking, oh, a few £5,000 ones. What happens if we apply for that? But actually, do we then miss out on the £1,000? Are you able to work with people to say, actually, you applied for £5,000, but we can only give you £1,000. Can you trim it down, or can you do this, or can you do that? Kind of the bit of horse trading going on?
Yeah, I suppose that's one way of putting it, Chris, for sure. What we're encouraging organisations to do within the form, it says, what is the amount of money you would ideally need to deliver your project? So this could be a contribution towards that, because we know that there's some really ambitious organisations and some of the really good work that goes on comes at a price. So it may be that they're looking for £20,000, for instance, and this would be a contribution towards that. It's good for us to have an awareness if there is additional funding that's required. You know, we have our own networks that we could maybe point them in the right direction towards if they do need a bit extra. Or equally, you know, we may say, well, here's £1,000, you know, towards this. And also, no bids too small. We've had some friendship groups that we run that have said, well, can we have a couple of £100 to buy some new mugs for the coffee morning that we run, for instance. So it could be little nice things like that through to your bigger ideas, you know, and different examples of that. We've had applications already from community food banks since Monday that, you know, provide vital support services for lots of people across the city. So I just encourage anyone with any idea, no matter how big or small, to get in touch and see what we can do to help them.
And to work with you, key message I'm hearing from you here, work with us. We want this money to be used in the most effective way possible, and that comes through partnership working. So where do people need to go to find out more?
So there is a website. So it's www.wolverhamptonhomes.org.uk/communitychest, and all of the information is on there, including a link to our new strategy as well, which talks about all of the things you've just said about partnership working, and what we're hoping to achieve in the long term through the work with these organisations across the city. So definitely get in touch, have a read on there. As I mentioned, anything you're not sure on, we are on hand to answer any questions, and we look forward to hopefully being inundated with applications by the 13th of March at midnight when the applications close.
And we'll put a reminder of that in all the links that we have as well, and in the show notes for the podcast when this goes out as well. Bex, thank you very much indeed, and look forward to hearing later on who does apply, who gets the money, and what impact they're having.
Definitely brilliant. Thanks, Chris.
That's Rebecca Clark, who is the Head of Customer Experience at Wolverhampton Homes. And if you want to apply for the small grant scheme, then the link is in the show notes. But it does end at midnight on March the 13th. It's been Fairtrade Fortnight, and we've been supporting that very much here at WCRFM. Brenda Shuttleworth is one of those who runs the Fairtrade shop in the Mander Centre, and I wonder how they're doing. So it's great to welcome Brenda Shuttleworth from the Fairtrade shop in the Mander Centre. Brenda, I've walked past a couple of times recently, but not had the chance to pop in. How's it all going?
Well, it's going very well, thank you. We're really pleased with our new environment. The display looks good, and we're just getting ready for Easter. At the moment, we've got our Mother's Day display on in the window and inside, lots of lovely gifts that people might want to have a look at for Mother's Day.
Excellent. And if people are sort of going to be going through the Mander Centre, you're on the ground floor, as I call it, the lower mall, as it's properly called.
Yeah, that's right.
And if you go to the end of the mall where Sassy Coffee is, turn left there, just opposite the community hub, and there you are. Very easy to find. There's now a big yellow arrow on the floor as well, pointing the way, isn't there?
We're really chuffed with that. We've been talking about it. And when we spoke to the marketing manager, she's always on my list of jobs to do. And she had already done it by the time we had really got that in place to ask her. Yeah.
No, it's great. I saw it when we were down there with the Literature Festival not long ago. And thanks for all your support around the Literature Festival, I should say, as well, because that was a really important event for us all. Now, Easter equals chocolate. Your shop equals chocolate. I'm sure you've got lots of special flavours in there.
Well, yes, we do. Unfortunately, not in Easter eggs, not so many flavours. We have got the real Easter egg, which is made by the Meaningful Chocolate Company, geared at getting the Easter story out there. It is geared towards younger people with a little booklet to have a browse in. And they'd also do an Easter egg hunt. So you buy a little box of eggs, six eggs in a box. That's all very nice. Unfortunately, we haven't quite got to the bottom of this. We don't know why there is a dearth of milk chocolate fair trade eggs this year. Divine can only offer us the 90-gram plain 70% chocolate egg. We do have, though, something that's new for us. It's from the Tony's Chocolony Company.
Right.
And they do a little Easter egg box, and then they do this little pouch that we have got in milk chocolate eggs. The box of eggs has got several different flavours, so you know you can share them around your friends. So that's
or you can eat them all yourself, whatever.
Well, no, that would be rude, wouldn't it?
No, they are for sharing.
But for adults, if you don't want an egg, we've got lots of flavours, a lot of them vegan friendly chocolate, either in the Divine range or Seed and Bean. And Seed and Bean do some very nice flavours. We have an espresso one. Mint, lemon and cardamom. Exciting flavour.
And if you can think of it, you've probably got it as a flavour, actually, I think, from when we've chatted before. Now, one of the reasons we're chatting is that it's Fair Trade Fortnight. The city's very proud of its fair trade status, as you are as well. Signs around the ring road. It is an important fortnight in the year for you and for the city.
Yes, it is, because it's the time when other people, apart from we who do fair trade all the time, are focused on fair trade. It's a time really for awareness raising and getting the message out that if you buy fair trade products, you are offering a living income to people in the global south. I don't know if you caught the programme in Panorama, I think now 3 Mondays ago, called Work for Sex, which was really shocking about some of the major tea brands and the conditions of their female employees, particularly in Kenya, that their focus was. But Kenya isn't alone, of course. So we can guarantee that if you buy one of our teas, anything with the fair trade mark on in supermarkets as well, then you are making sure that the working conditions of women on the tea plantations are as they should be.
Indeed, and you know, fair trade is worth reminding people as well as supporting individual farmers and actually looking at the whole ethos of farming, that you're also supporting communities, aren't you, through the community, I forgot what it's called now, community levy, is it, or the way in which communities are supported?
It's called a premium, and that's paid back into a cooperative kind of community, so that the people on the ground who are doing the farming or producing or manufacturing, they choose themselves how they want to develop in their community. So it could be healthcare, it could be training, particularly now important, is training in ways of combating climate change. Cocoa growers in Ghana are particularly affected because it's too hot now, that the trees are burned. So how do you combat climate change in that sort of environment? And so the premium can be used in that way as well. A lot of education work done through the premium too.
Excellent. Now, the shop's run by volunteers, yourself. Remind us of your opening times.
We're open Tuesday through to Saturday, 10 o'clock to 5 o'clock.
Excellent. And just to remind people, look for the big yellow sticker on the floor and turn left at the end.
Yes, thank you.
That's Brenda Shuttleworth of the Fair Trade Shop in the Mander Centre. And that's it from me. I'll be along next week with another podcast. If you've got any information or news or stories, you can email me, chris@wcrfm.com. That's chris@wcrfm.com. And I look forward to your company next time.